You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode, and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. builtforthestage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation. All right, our guest today, Gideon Glick. Built for the Stage fam, talking some fitness with him before we went live here on this episode. Gideon is currently in this little play called To Kill a Mockingbird. Not sure if anyone's heard of it. He's also been in Significant Other, Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, and Spring Awakening on the Broadway. Gideon, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming. I really like you.
I like you too.
You know, honestly, we're going to hang out after this because I saw you in To Kill a Mockingbird last week, got to chat a little bit, meet you in person for the first time because we'd just been chatting through the app, and it was thoroughly enjoyable. Got to see you backstage.
Yes, well, the feeling is mutual.
You were great.
Well, thanks.
I'm not just saying that.
I appreciate that.
You know, I heard that your Tony nomination was a fluke, but they were wrong.
I'm so glad.
They were wrong. You were actually good.
Don't believe the hype.
You have some...
The negative hype.
You have some talent up there.
Thank you. Thank you, good sir.
I hope I didn't, like, upset you, but... So for all the listeners, we're backstage, and I don't know if it's... I mean, it's normal for people to be waiting at the stage door for actors, but there was a good amount of people there, more than you might see in some other shows. I don't know. Is it Jeff Daniels? Is that why? Is it because of you?
I think it's Jeff. I think it's...
Not Jack Daniels, but Jeff Daniels.
Well, no. Well, people will be in line for
this
Jack
woman. Well, yeah, right. This woman in front of me getting her tickets was like, is Jack Daniels going to be in the show? Because I really want to see him. And he's like, yeah, Jack's going to be in it. And we shared a little laugh.
Well, Jeff Bridges is also sometimes what people think. They're coming to see Jeff Bridges.
Oh, man. Yeah. The disappointment.
Well, or maybe...
Or maybe not.
Maybe a pleasant surprise. Who knows?
So there's a lot of people at the stage door either to see Jeff or you. I don't know.
I think that they're there to see To Kill a Mockingbird.
Maybe.
It's a very, very popular title.
Maybe.
It's a great book. It's a great movie. It's a great play.
Do kids still read it in school now?
Uh-huh.
It's still going.
Oh, yeah.
Good for that book. Good. Seventh grade?
I think it depends on your school. Mine was seventh, but I've heard it can go all the way up to the 10th.
I'm pretty sure seventh was for me. So anyways, Gideon and I are walking out of the stage door from the inside of the theater to the outside, and I happen to exit first. So I come out, and there's the crowd of people, and they start cheering and clapping, and I like raise my hand, thank you so much, thank you for coming, and they're still clapping, and then finally had to be like, no, I'm not in the show, it's this guy.
Who do you think they thought you were?
It doesn't matter. They don't know. You know, people,
that's
they come
what I'm saying. They're happy to go to Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah. You come out there and they're like, who are you? Were you? All right. I'll stop there. But that was really enjoyable for me.
Well, I'm glad you got that experience.
I mean, me too, because the show itself was, gosh, I mean, if I didn't have that experience afterwards, it would have just been a wasted night.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
All joking aside, Gideon is brilliant. Go see the show now. The ticket is worth it. All right. So I'm trying out this new thing, and it sucks, but we're going to do it. So we're going to get into our pre-workout drink first before our training session.
Sounds good.
It's not good.
It's fine. I think you got to go with it.
I think
you got to embrace it.
You think?
I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But in the meantime, you have to just embrace it.
All right. So for our pre-workout drink, question one, who was young Gideon going to be when he grew up? Like, was Gideon like going to be an astronaut? Who was he going to be?
I mean, this isn't very inventive, but he wanted to be a Broadway actor from a very, very early age. He started singing. I'm going to say I started singing. And
you're going to jump out of the third person?
Yeah, I got into acting, and I really just wanted to do it all the time. And so,
what was your first theater or like skit or dramatic experience?
First show I was ever in was The Wizard of Oz in preschool. And I wanted to play Toto more than anything, and we had to pick out of a hat, and I picked Toto. And I would like to think that that was providential in some way, that I'm in the right path from very early on. I entered the right path.
Did you have lines as Toto?
No, I just barked.
Wow.
He was my favorite character, so naturally that's who I wanted to play.
In the movie? When you watch the movie, you're like, wow,
yeah.
My favorite.
Well, because dogs are awesome.
You had the Scarecrow, the Lion, you had the Tin Man, all those characters to choose from. And you're like, I want to be the little scruffy dog.
Yeah, I think I had a stuffed animal dog named Toto. I was nuts for Toto. Oh my gosh. I mean, he was so cute.
And you got to be Toto.
And I got to play Toto. I wasn't as cute.
What was your costume like?
Oh, I mean, this is a preschool production. I think I had like a paper strip and then ears.
Mm.
That's it.
With like what, brown jogging pants?
I don't even know what I wore. I don't know. I don't remember. It was preschool. It was so long ago.
Does anyone have photos of this?
No, because I'm the baby of the family. So unfortunately, the babies never get photographs because the parents.
They were over it.
They're so tired of it.
They were over it.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Toto. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. You're doing this thing with an organization or an awareness group called the Covenant House.
Yeah.
Or so, you did a thing.
Yeah. So the Covenant House is a organization that provides shelter for homeless youth across the country. And they do this thing called a sleep out, where the whole idea is that we sleep out so homeless youth doesn't have to, and we raise money for that. And this was the Broadway sleep out, or the stage and screen sleep out that Audra McDonald does, and Stephanie J. Block, Rachel Brosnahan, a slew of wonderful, wonderful people. And they do it every year. And we raised, I think, like $360,000 for this one night. And it goes to the Covenant House. And the Covenant House gives shelter to I think it's 18 to 21. It's a small little bracket. Obviously, if you're a homeless person, come to the Covenant House. They will redirect you and house you and figure out a place for you to be. But it's for 18 to 21. They provide counseling. They help you finish your GED, get you into college, help you apply for jobs, rehousing. It's an incredible, incredible organization. And that was all I did was raise money for that one night. But I believe in giving back. I mean, there's a woman named Marion Edelman who says, "Service is the rent we pay for being." And I think it's such an important way to think about life.
Yeah, that's good. I paid my rent this morning.
Well, congratulations.
I ran 9 miles from Queens over the Edcotch Bridge to Central Park and back. I'm running the New York City Marathon.
Got it.
For this organization called Action for Healthy Kids.
Uh-huh.
And they help with like childhood obesity, mental health, and they partner with schools across the country. So I am running the marathon to raise funds.
That's amazing.
So how tough or enjoyable was the night out?
Oh, it was really, it was so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't sleep a wink. It got to the point where I realized there, you know, I kept shuffling and trying to find a spot that would be comfortable. And then I realized, oh, I'm not going to. And that was kind of this, it's a very simple realization. But once I surrendered to that, I thought it made me, that's where the empathy really started, kind of became very super powerful, because mm-hmm. I realized There is no comfortable spot. This is just not going to be comfortable. And this is how people live their lives. And not only do they live their lives this way, but then they have to go to school, or they have to go to their job, and they have to wash their face in the bathroom or at the train station. And then they also have to do the work of pretending that they're not homeless. So not only are they deeply, deeply uncomfortable and not rested, but then the shame that's involved and not having to pretend that you have a house and that you have a home. It's just broke my heart. Mm. But it also changed me.
Yeah, cool. Good for you. Yeah, check it out, all the listeners out there. Covenant House. All right, our strength section today. The question is going to be about your Tony nomination.
Yes.
Congrats in all sincerity.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's good for you. So Gideon plays Dil Harris in To Kill a Mockingbird, the show that we've mentioned 82 times so far today in the episode.
It doesn't get enough press, so let's keep doing it.
All right, let's keep pumping it. I will pump it for the gods on my Insta and all that. So in another interview that I read with you, you said that you're naturally an anxious guy.
Yes.
And that the character of Dil is not.
No.
So when you were developing the character, what choices did you consciously make to do? You do a great job of you. He's grounded, but yet like he's kind of, I don't want to say naive or
well, he's a child.
Or vulnerable.
He's definitely vulnerable.
Then I want to say it because I do, but that's the polite thing you say. You know, you say now don't take offense by this, or you say like, now don't get angry. What are you? So I just said that to be polite, right?
Okay.
So good. I'm glad that I got the message that you were giving. So he's very naive, and yet he has this like wisdom that he brings. Where?
Well, don't you think a lot of children have wisdom?
They all do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
They say, because it's pure.
It's pure. It almost is black and white. Good is very good is good, and bad is bad. Mm-hmm. The gray hasn't really come in yet.
Yeah.
And so, especially when it's about virtues like civility and so forth, it's very clear to this character what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah, there's no filter in what they see or hear, and there's also no filter in what they say.
Yeah,
and that's, I think, the most powerful part for us as the adults, because they're just winging it. They're just letting it loose.
Yeah, you can learn a lot from a child.
You can. So you're anxious, but Dil's not.
Yeah.
How did you un-anxious yourself up there? How did you get grounded?
This is a character that builds himself up. He's a very grandiose character, and because he is vulnerable, he has a defense mechanism, which is these stories that he tells. This kind of grand life that he wants everybody to believe that he has. Thinking about that is the way he speaks and the way he presents himself. All of a sudden, your body shifts. It's your chest comes out. He gestures in a certain way. He also emulates Atticus because he likes Atticus. So all of a sudden, he's holding his body like this, and his arms are behind him, and his chest is pressed out. And I think that helps with grounding. But again, I think he's living in this world to protect himself, so he doesn't have to be a nervous, scared person, because he's living a life that is actually quite horrible. Mm-hmm. And he's created this house of cards to protect himself. So that's kind of how I offset that.
Yeah. Going back to the anxiety, because I do like to talk about this a lot on the podcast. I know you've listened to every episode, but I'm being so sarcastic and whatever, and I'm usually not like this, but I think I'm so comfortable around you.
We barely even know each other, but it's wonderful.
It's something about you. There's something about you. All right, so the anxiety part. I like to talk about it a lot because I think it's something that, especially in the theater community, we don't talk enough about it, because this profession, more than tons out there, can cause great anxiety, depression, the ups and downs of
totally
not knowing what's next, if what I'm doing currently is good enough, am I good enough, am I doing the right, should I even be acting at all? How do you fight that on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I think it's an ongoing battle. I think in my 20s, I was a lot more anxious and a lot more depressed. I think I'll be honest, finding my partner was really, really helpful. It gave me a sense of a constant, because it's such a roller coaster of a business, and kind of falling in love with him really, really helped me. I sucks that, because I don't want to be like fall in love, and that's how you'll cure your depression and anxiety. I mean, it'll never go away, but that for me was a really big turning point in my life, and then my career followed. It could have been that happened naturally, or it's connected. But I do think it's connected. I met him right when I did Significant Other off Broadway, which was a really big career leap, and my life just kind of really changed for the better. I think because of him.
So let's turn the angle then. Instead of saying fight your anxiety by falling in love, let's say...
I don't think you should fight your anxiety ever. I think you need to accept your anxiety. That's the only way to deal with anxiety.
Accept your anxiety, not by falling in love, but by being the type of person your partner is to others.
I think that's beautiful.
Because if we are... What's your partner's name?
His name is Perry.
Perry. Perry, welcome to the fam, baby. That Perry, duh. Fresh skin.
It's fresh.
Fresh skin. If we all can be like Perry to one another, then in essence, we're all accepting anxiety for each other.
Yeah.
And together.
Yes. And I think there's an element of, you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated. I think you should treat people the way you want to be treated. And I hope that's like being a good person, a good friend, and a good partner.
Yeah.
You can also learn a lot in relationships, whether that be romantic or friendship.
Yeah.
And you need, again, those are constants. So friendships are constants. You got to figure out something that can give you some stability, because the career will never be stable. Even at your highest high, it's never going to be stable. You're never going to work consistently every day. You could be the most successful actor and still have months where you don't work just because of scheduling and so forth. So what do you do at that time? Sure. But how do you maintain your... How do you maintain your creativity, and also how do you maintain your emotional health?
Well, let's get into that in our conditioning section of the podcast. Can you tell us of a time when you weren't Tony nominee Gideon Glit, when you were struggling, like you're talking about the like in-betweens of work and not, or maybe it wasn't involving that at all, but... Just something that, because in fitness, I try to parallel it to fitness.
Mm-hmm.
You have your stall outs. You have your detrimental comparisons to others. You just have things in your journey that are going not the greatest at the moment. And the same goes in our career. How did you get through it, and what was that situation?
I mean, I think for anything, acceptance is always number one. You know, I came to New York doing Spring Awakening, and that was I was very young, and I wasn't necessarily, I didn't have craft, I didn't have a work ethic, I was just a high schooler who liked to cut class and wanted to do theater, so that's who I was, and, you know, I was really fortunate that it brought me to New York, and it opened so many doors, but I wasn't necessarily ready for those doors. I didn't have discipline yet. I didn't have a work ethic. I didn't have a craft. And it took me a really long time to figure that out. I went to school, but I didn't go to school for acting. I went for art history. I really, really enjoyed that degree. But again, I wasn't figuring out craft. So that was the journey. The journey was doing. The more I did, the more I learned. But it took me a really long time to kind of figure that out and figure out how to do it the way that fits me. For instance, we talked about anxiety. I'm an anxious person. I'm very nervous at all auditions, no matter what it is. It's a horrible, horrible thing to have to go through. People shouldn't have to audition all the time, but that's part of our business. But again, it's about acceptance. So whatever I'm feeling in that moment, that's what you're bringing in. So even if you're playing the most suave, I'll never play a suave character, but if you are someone who's not counter what you are, you got to figure out what it is you're feeling in that moment that you can bring to get that character to life. And that was a really big learning point for me, where I wasn't trying to go in there and try to fit whatever this was going to be, but it was trying to bring whatever I was feeling. And obviously all the work I did to get there. But it's not just, you don't just show up and you're just being. It's not that. You have to work at it. You have to think about who this person is. There comes a point where you have to let it all go and not care about what what the final result is. And that's kind of what we do. And so learning that was a really, really big thing for me. Did I answer your question though?
Whatever you just said will be like the subtitle quote for your episode.
Sounds good.
That was brilliant. I'm not even going to try to say what you said, but
all right.
It will be... It'll be there. Everyone listening, if you didn't catch that, just rewind about 45 seconds and listen to that again. So awesome. Well, let's wrap it up. You're going to be stepping into the role of Seymour.
Yes.
For 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
At the West Side Theater off Broadway.
Yes, sir.
It's a production of Little Shop of Horrors. Mm-hmm. I had this professor at my musical theater
horrors
program.
Horrors or horrors?
Yeah. You're not going to a Little Shop of Horrors. Like,
right.
If that's best, that's a whole different musical, Best Little Whorehouse in
Texas.
Well,
horrors is actually, it's more fun to say in a strange way.
It is.
Horrors is like, it.
Yeah.
But horrors kind of has a fun little arc to it.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, let's see how you guys pronounce it when we get there.
Okay, sounds good.
So, first off, you're filling the role for Jonathan Groff that you were once a castmate with.
Yeah, Spring Awakening. Directed by Michael Mayer, who directed Spring Awakening.
There you go.
It's a nice little full circle moment.
It is. Can you tell us how that opportunity was presented to you?
Sure. I got a text from Michael Mayer. I was on vacation in Mexico, and my partner and I finally decided on our wedding date, which we thought, okay, it'll be November 11th. It took us about a year to decide. We sent out an email to our friends and family, just like the closer ones before we sent the invites. Be like, hey, just kind of say the date. 4 days later, we flew back from Mexico and arrived in New York. And then at 10 o'clock that night, I got a text from Michael Mayer saying, hey, Gidge, you want to do this? And so, you know, my first instinct was to be like, oh God, I can't do it. But then my partner was like, duh, because I've always wanted to do Little Shop, and he knows that, and we love Little Shop at home, and we both grew up listening to it. It's just the best musical ever. And so he was like, of course you're going to do it. I was like, no, I know, of course I'm going to do it, but like, I panicked. So then we decided, okay, so we're going to push our wedding back 1 week, and so I'll finish Mockingbird November 3rd, and then I'll go into Little Shop from November 5th to the 17th, and then we get married on November 18th.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it'll be a very eventful November.
I guess.
Yeah.
Have you ever shared that text story on another podcast?
No, I have not.
Yes. Yeah, I got you back.
You got some first dibs.
Did he include like an emoji?
No.
Did he do like a wink?
There were no emojis.
Like a
no winkies.
Semicolon parentheses at you.
Just letters.
Just straight.
Just straight.
What do you, what's letters. What do you call it? Gidge?
Yeah, he calls me Gidge. Like Gidget from what is it? The Beach Boys or there's some beach movie.
Yeah.
Where
that one.
Gidget is this character.
And that's you, Gidge.
Yeah. A lot of the Spring Awakening folk call me Gidge.
All right.
Because that's what he called me.
Cool.
But yeah. I'm very excited. And I gotta say, I've seen run-throughs. It's an extraordinary production. And Groff is incredible. Tammy Blanchard's incredible. Christian Borle's incredible. It's going to give you exactly what you want out of Little Shop. And I had a shit-eating grin the whole time watching it.
Yeah.
And I love watching it. Everyone is so good.
And again, the dates that you'll be playing Seymour?
November 5th to the 17th. So it's just a two-week only affair. I call it my, it's not summer stock, so it's my fall stock.
Got it. Is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to with the show?
Well, I haven't done a musical in 7 years. I grew up doing musicals and loving musicals, and then I sort of became a play actor. And so I'm really excited to do it again. I get so... Every time I see a musical, I get this longing and this pang to be in it, and also just this excitement to watch it. So, but they're hard. They're very hard. It's a muscle. It's a certain sort of... stamina that I'm not so accustomed to. So I find it seems like a good challenge and hopefully good fun.
Yeah.
And only 2 weeks.
And only
so
2 weeks.
So if it's horrible and I suck, it'll be done.
No. Well, I hope to be there for sure. Yeah, I don't know. Do you want to, can you stay till, do you want to skip the show tonight? Can you hang out?
If you want to call Scott Rudin and ask him, go ahead.
All right. Well, yeah. I'll take that as a hard no. So okay, thanks for coming and being on the podcast,
Gideon. Of course, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Don't forget about Broadway Podcast Network. Go to the website, broadwaypodcastnetwork.com. Go to the Instagram, Broadway Podcast Network. There's tons of good content on our network, like Josh Swallow's Broadway, or Ensemblist, or Equity One, or The Theater Podcast. There's like 90 of them. Just go see which one you like the best after you listen to mine. And yeah, you guys have yourself a good day. It's me, Roscoe, signing off.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.